Is your full name Jonathan Williamson?
It is.
Have you prepared a statement of evidence dated the 28th of July 2023?
Yes.
Do you have the qualifications and experience recorded in attachment 1 to your statement?
Yes.
Are there any corrections you need to make to your evidence?
No, I'm not aware of.
Thank you. Do you confirm that to the best of your knowledge of belief your statement of evidence is correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Please answer any questions from my friends in the court.
Afternoon, Mr. Williamson.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to ask some questions just for clarification and understanding really about the Lua Huai decision and support tool. I've read through your evidence, thanks for that, and I'll just start at the end, and this may be a clarification, just a point of phrasing, but at paragraph 166, this is volume 308, page 0095. Yeah, just in the conclusion. This evidence here has outlined an example of a DST developed for the Huai catchment, which calculates the water quality impact at a sub-catchment scale on land use management decisions at a paddock scale. Is it actually the other way around, that it calculates the impact of land use management decisions at a paddock scale on water quality at a sub-catchment scale?
Yes, it looks at the outcomes at sub-catchment scale. So the inputs would be paddock scale,
yeah.
And the outputs are sub-catchment scale.
Okay, so perhaps we're just switching that sentence around from the looks of it. That's what I thought. I just wanted to clarify. That was my understanding until I got to that point. And what it does is it calculates in rather water quality parameters at sub-catchment boundaries. That's what it does?
Yeah, the outlets.
Yeah. Okay. And just in terms of what the tool actually covers, it covers 10 sub-catchments in the upper Waikato FMU, that's right?
There's the grid scale, and then there's what we call the sub-catchment scale, and then there's the reporting scales, which is I think what you're looking at. So figure 1 shows the 10 reporting catchments, but we can take information out of the smaller scale than that.
I see, so that's what you call the RDST model domain, that's the out of bounds of what the tool covers,
yes.
And you can do smaller scales within that.
Yep, and then on the figure 1, it just shows the healthy river sub-catchments, but there are, I think there's a figure somewhere in here. If you look at figure 20 as an example, it shows a series of black lines, which are the actual sub-catchments that we can report at. So I think this is 177 from memory.
I see. So your sub-catchments are not the same as the PC1 sub-catchments?
No. They're a much finer scale.
And going back to the figure 1 on page 41, 308, 41, the white arc state is it falls within that area, but it's a subset, it's not the full area. So the boundaries of the tool don't align with the boundaries of the estate, do they?
No, the tool aligns with the natural catchment boundaries.
Yeah. So it catches the Wairākei estate plus some additional land. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. I just want to take you to Mr. Ford's evidence, which is in the same folder at the following tab, paragraph 30. You could help me a bit with this from your expert point of view. You've got your own.
Yeah.
You might need to look behind you if you don't have Mr. Ford's evidence in your package.
Narrow light blue one, which has 308, 309, 310 on it. Can you run?
Yeah, and we're at tab 3.
Thank you.
In paragraph 30. And about halfway through that paragraph, it says the negative aspects of its adoption is that it is currently only able to mow one catchment. Just pause there. Do you think perhaps that means the domain boundaries, as you've called them? That's the limitation he's referring to there.
Yeah, I think Mr. Ford is confirmed over the masters, but he's talking about the catchment from Lake Awakuri back up to the
outlet of Lake Chapter. Effectively, the FNU. Okay. And he goes on to say, and it requires that all of the farms in the catchment are modelled at the same time, so it is not universally applicable. Are you able to explain what that limitation is in perhaps a little more detail?
Well, I think
especially the not universally applicable part of it?
Yeah, I think what that refers to is this model doesn't cover the entire Waikato region. So it's not universally applicable across the entire region.
I see. Thank you. That clarifies that for me. Can you explain how this tool would work for baselining a particular property? Is that possible with this tool?
What do you mean by baselining?
Well, for establishing how does it work in terms of establishing what the status quo situation is and then effectively monitoring improvements from there?
Yes, so the model was calibrated to the base case, so it was measuring flow and measured water quality at a particular point in time. Obviously, this is going back some time now. So that was what we called the base case. And then scenarios can be run and developed looking at changing the land use, whether that be afforestation, deforestation, different. Productive uses of the property, and the mix of land uses can then be compared in the outputs. So So in terms of the benchmarking question, I think that's the calibration scenario that we developed. It's simply a case of comparing different concentration traces in the stream if you're looking at water quality, or in terms of the dry water, if you look at the hydrograph, to get a comparison on different energy scenarios.
Okay. And if you were to do that, what would it tell you about a particular property? If water quality deteriorated at a catchment level, what would that tell you about the performance of a particular property?
So if the water quality is deteriorating at the outlet, we then just need to work back and say, well, what's different about the inputs, within the catchment? So that's a parameter that's easy to assess and look at.
Okay, and in terms of those parameters that you referred to in there in your evidence, total nitrogen, total phosphorus, E. coli, and total suspended solids, I see no mention of producing a nitrogen leaching loss rate using this tool. Does it? Can you calculate a nitrogen leaching loss rate?
Yes, the Epson model is the component of the decision support tool that generates nitrogen loss at the subsoil. So that's the input to the various models. So we could calculate it from that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. That's clarified it for me. No further questions there.
Thank you. Williamson, who owns the model?
Clyde owns the model.
WPL. And if, just hypothetically, mm-hmm. the estate were to be broken up, how easy would it be for a new owner to make use of this model for ongoing operations?
That's a good question. It's like doing an operation in the house, as well as the builder's got relevant experience and capabilities, and they should be able to pick it up and do alterations to the house. It's the same with the model. Another practitioner could configure the model and rerun it.
Is it essentially a spreadsheet base?
No. It's the spreadsheet inputs,
yes.
And some of the components, but the models themselves are digital electronic tools.
The new owner of the land, though, to make use of it, they'd have to have access to the source code, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they'll have to, I would imagine, as part of a land transaction.
Okay. If they were to continue on with that rather than transfer to a school card or overseas or something else.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Williamson. Just a clarification for me. Is there any issue with the fact that you used ABSIM and we're talking about overseer or PC1 as one option?
Not really. ABSIM produces its outputs on a daily basis, so that gives us the ability to look at seasonality and impacts of climate and weather and so forth. But you can aggregate up a daily trace to the unit, which is similar to what OSC produces. And as part of our modelling exercise, that was one of the checks that was performed on the model.
Okay, my reason for asking is I've seen other comparisons between ABSIM and OSSEO and not all of those identical.
No.
So there could be a little bit of an issue there possibly for that?
Two models are going to be identical. They might be really different. But part of the work that we did was around benchmarking the model and showing that we had irregularities, and then doing checks or calibration checks against what's actually happening in those streams. So the point is that if you put too much in, you're going to get too much out.
Okay, no, that's fine, thank you. Just one other issue I'm interested in is, are you familiar with Roland Stenger's nitrogen lag review?
Of our work?
No, it's a paper produced for Waikato Regional Council about mean travel times and load to come from the upper Waikato FMU. Are you familiar with that?
What year was that produced?
I think 2022, I can't remember exactly, but it's just fairly recent, I think.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that paper.
Okay, thank you.
Roland reviewed our work, so he was peer reviewed.
I saw that, so I just wondered if you've seen this thing. Okay, that's fine, thank you. Thank you.
Anything arising? Thank you, Mr. Williamson, for your evidence. You're excused.
Thank you.
So our next witness is Mr. Stuart Ford. Do you solemnly, sincerely, and truthfully declare and affirm that the evidence you are about to give for this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Is your full name Stuart John Ford?
It is.
Have you prepared a statement of evidence in these proceedings dated the 28th of July 2023?
I have.
Do you have the qualifications and experience set out in that statement?
I have.
You're also the signatory to the joint witness statement of science and technical from August 2022.
That's correct.
The economic statement of the 5th of September 2023.
That's correct.
And the farm systems statement from the 6th and 8th of September 2023.
That's correct.
Are there any corrections you need to make to your statement?
Yes, there's one at the bottom of page 5. I've got the anagram FNRST and I haven't told you what that is, so I would suggest that you put Fonterra nitrogen risk scorecard before that and fill in the brackets.
Yeah, just two supplementary questions before I hand you over to my friends. But there was some questions of Mr. Tresler in relation to a farm plan for Wairahe Estate. I understand you may have had some involvement in preparing one previously, and I wondered if you could speak to the court on the process you went through for that.
Okay. My team were instructed to create a farm plan for the estate. At the time that they were applying for the consent that was discussed earlier, we had a look at it, and it was such a vast area. And we're used to doing farm plans in Canterbury where they're individual cottage farms. So we decided the best approach was to build the total farm plan up from the individual farming units basis. So my staff went on and carried out a farm plan inspection farm by farm, and actually we did oversee it for the estate farm by farm. And then I accumulated all that up into one document. And that was mainly because of the logistics of assessing such a large plot of land.
And then secondly, there were some questions, particularly during my legal submissions, in terms of the risk of applying a one property approach across the estate, given the averaging that would occur, and I wonder if you may have some comments to address the questions the court asked me then.
Yes, I was concerned that what was being discussed there was a simple average. So if you did 20 overseers on 20 farms, you total it and divided that by 20. That's not the way it works at all. It's a weighted average per hectare of land. So on a traditional dairy farm, for example, you would most probably have one block which was in some sort of feed crop, and so it would go through being ploughed, the feed crop sown, fed out, then it would be worked again, there would be nitrogen applied, then the grass would be re-sown, and there would be probably quite a lot of nitrogen then to get it going. That paddock would have had an incredibly high in leaching result and overseed. But when it's averaged over the whole farm, the whole farm result is much lower. And it's exactly the same with Wairaki Estate. There may be parts of the farm which are particularly high, but there are other parts of the farm which are very low, or even in the case of forestry, incredibly low. And so if it's worked out on a weighted average per hectare of land, it's no different than a small farm. So I'm not sure what the concern is about averaging, trying to hide something, because it can't be hidden when it's all included as a weighted average.
Thank you. He remains here to answer your questions from my friends in the court. Thank you.
Just on that, Mr. Ford, what is the weighting?
The weighting is whatever area, overseer is broken up into different blocks of land.
Yeah.
So it depends how finely you broke the land up, what the weighting actually is.
Yeah.
But when we did it for the FEP, it was broken up as you would normally break it up on a normal farm.
Well, and that would come back to, for example, looking at an area with one herd, one milking shed, and one effluent disposal system, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes, that's the way we built up the total FEP.
Yeah. All right.
So just so I'm clear, when you say one farm, that's what the judge just asked you now.
Oh, sorry. In terms of Wairaki Estate, I'm talking about the total estate.
I understand that's the estate, but when you do your assessment for those things, you said that you went.
Yeah, but
you built it up from units.
That was for a practical reason, an appropriate way to build up a total farm.
And those units would have been, if as I understand it, there are 20 sheds. I assume there are 20 herds, one for each shed, and there are 20 effluent disposal systems.
Yes.
Right, and each of those would then be a unit.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's an overseer file for each of those units?
There was. I'm not sure whether it's still available, because overseer units should have changed to overseer FM. So it would have to be. But I understand that Palmer would have overseer files.
Can I just clarify something, Bear? What I understand you to be saying is that as a block as a whole, you're talking about maybe 10 kilograms per hectare over a large area, and that would be the total load, so from a catchment load point of view, that's how you calculate it, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. One of the other concerns that I would be interested in is whether there are localized effects by having a dairy shed near a stream, for example.
Dairy sheds, for example, aren't a problem in terms of nitrogen leaching. So nitrogen leaching is caused by the animals that are managed on the farm. So it would depend on how you manage your land near to the stream or the brook, whether it was a problem or not.
And that would be done through the farm environment plan?
That would be done through the farm environment plan.
Thank you. No, I understand.
Sorry, Councillor, to leap in ahead of you all. Questions from Mr. Ford? Mr. Fisher.
Afternoon, Mr. Ford.
Afternoon.
Just to start in your evidence at paragraph 21, which is page 308.0135.
Yes, I've got that.
You say there, the second sentence starts, I and other members of the expert conferencing advocated very strongly that OVC remained the far superior method of calculating the NLR than all of the other alternatives. Those alternatives included APSIM, didn't they?
Yes.
So you think OVC is far superior to APSIM?
Not in terms of calculating a valid result. I think APSIM is far superior, but APSIM is not available to every farm. So we looked at the accuracy and the availability of the different tools.
Right. So you perhaps this could have been qualified, but the sentence you've written here.
It could be used.
We're not going to get into apps now.
No, sir. That was the question.
Right.
I will move on. Paragraph 25. You say this about Mr. Trebilko's statement. My assumption is that changing the nitrogen leaching loss rate thresholds to the nitrogen risk scorecard values will not significantly affect the number of farms in each risk category. So we argue that Mr. Trebilko proposes to use the same percentiles that were used for Overseer in the decisions version.
Yes.
So the number of farms in each bracket would be the same.
Yes.
I think we've got that, Mr. Ford, and I think we've been, a number of witnesses have addressed this on the issue of absolute correspondence versus a percentile identification.
And just moving down to paragraph 30. And you say there, the Rui Tuwai tool, this is the second sentence, is the most suitable tool because it models the life of nutrients pathway directly to the river.
Yep.
And just to clarify, in terms of the most suitable tool, what purpose were you thinking there? Not as a gateway, but for some other purpose?
In my opinion, it would be appropriate as a gateway if it was available to everyone. But it's basically because we're trying to achieve change in the river, and all the alternative modelling tools finish at the bottom of the root zone. So, I mean, we have to make assumptions in terms of what the flow is from the bottom of the root zone to the river. So. That's my opinion. Who I told, because it models the nutrient pathway directly to the river, is a far superior tool in terms of what we're trying to achieve in PC1.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
No questions, sir.
Thank you.
Well, just one question of clarification. I think in answer to a question for Council, Ms. Carruthers, you said that you run the Overseer figures in connection with the resource consent application previously referred to. Was that the one that was filed in 2017? Is that what you're talking about?
I think so, I'm not sure.
You did it, you ran those figures?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know what year you were doing that?
No, I can't remember now,
and
I can't remember what version of
Overseer
it was.
Right, okay. So it was within the life of this plan change process, you were doing that in last...
Yes.
That's right. I was just clarify, Mr. Treasurer said he thought that that application related to future land use changes that were no longer being contemplated, but my understanding of the analysis you were doing was in relation to the land use that is currently in place.
No, it was looking at the future land use. So we ran the OMC model on the potential future land use.
So not on the land use that we sit here today?
No.
Right, okay. So none of those overseas figures relate to, or analysis relates to WPL's current brackets?
No, no, they don't at all.
Okay, just thank you for that.
Thank you. Re-examination. Thank you very much for your evidence, Mr. Ford. Excuse.
My final witness is Ms. Dines. Now, this isn't an invitation to any of my friends to ask more questions than I'd intended, but I just wanted to check if they're still going at 5. May we set a little late, but it looks like we could be close.
Commissioner Mayland has a plane to catch, so we're not going to make it to 5, we'll make it to about 4:45.
Excellent. I told her to say yes or no to everything, so it should be
Well, and I think that some of the things which Ms. Dines addresses in her evidence were also addressed in your submissions. They relate to the wording in the plan, so I don't know that the court needs to have the same issues rehearsed. I don't want to take too much away from you, Ms. Hines, but let's see where we get to.
Okay, back to you. Is your full name? I'm sorry. Do you solemnly, sincerely, and truthfully declare and affirm that the evidence you have about to give for this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Is your full name Sharon Gale Dines?
Yes.
Have you prepared 2 statements of evidence in this matter, evidence in chief on the 28th of July and rebuttal on the 11th of August?
Yes.
Do you have the qualifications and experience set out in that statement?
I do.
I've just seen the correction you told me about this morning. I told her she didn't need to correct it, but she's done a statement of rebuttal evidence. I told her she didn't need to correct, but I just chuckled to myself, so maybe we should. Do you have any other correction?
I do have one other correction. In my evidence in chief at paragraph 11, between subclauses D and E, you should insert the words first statement of evidence of Mr. Richard Grant Allen. I just noticed that I was including that statement of evidence in my list.
So with that correction, do you confirm that the contents of your 2 statements are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
And you were also the signatory for 1 of the joint witness statements, being the planning statement from the 11th to 14th of September?
Yes.
Thank you. Please answer any questions.
Mr. Conroy,
Mr.
Conroy. Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Ms. Dines.
Good afternoon.
Now, if I could take the paragraph 19 of your evidence, Chief. And you've set out there, at the time you wrote this, these were the remaining concerns with Plan Change 1. They've been narrowed down slightly since then, but you support the objectives of Plan Change, don't you? There's no reference, no changes sought to those. And you support the plan change making good progress towards achieving the 30 climate?
Yes.
And so your evidence is not about what the goals of the plan change should be, but instead how they should be achieved?
Yes.
Now, down the bottom of that page, you talk about the reference to the 20th of October 2016. And on the following page, paragraph 24, you discuss that and you say, J
two of the reasons you considered that date to be appropriate in the notified version was, first, as a reference point for comparison as a general moratorium on land change while PC1 was going through the plan development process. Now, a third reason that date was appropriate at the time was because the targets being set in PC1 were ambitious. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that the targets are ambitious, but I don't know that that's why the land use change was appointed.
It's probably one of the underlying reasons why, as you describe it, a moratorium subject to a non-complying rule was seen as necessary and you saw it as appropriate, was because holding the line in some form to enable the objectives to be achieved was important. And the moratorium on land use change, unless that change had a non-compliant activity consent, was both an effective and an efficient way to discourage people from investing in land use change. Would you agree with that?
If it wasn't already subject to a compliance,
I understand. It was a very clear signal, though, on the plan at that point, wasn't it? And then, as you say, in 25, it wasn't a complete ban on land use change. After that day, a person could apply for a non-compliant activity consent to authorise a land use change. And before that date, as WPL did, a person could apply for a COC if the activity was a permitted activity. And so that's what WPL did, obtain COCs. Now, turning back to the reasons why that date was appropriate in the notified versions, you're not saying the objectives of PC1 have become any less important due to the passage of time between 2016 and now?
No.
And one conceivable outcome of the Schedule 1 process that PC1 went through was that in order to protect the achievement of those objectives, the 2016 date would be retained?
As a moratorium, yes.
Well, it was possible that it would be maintained in the decisions version such that it continued to apply past that date, didn't it?
Yeah, as a moratorium.
And so that's a lawful thing for the plan to have done.
Yes.
And so while WPL's conversion of putting 152 hectares of land to dairy farming was lawful under the COC, would you agree that was at its own risk due to the operation of Section 20A of the RMA?
Yes.
And thinking more broadly to other landowners who have not had the benefit of the COC, or the owner of Tangata Whenua ancestral land who has only recently had that land returned, they will have to go through a consent application process to determine whether their proposed land use change can go ahead, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Now, on the next page of your evidence, paragraph 34, you talk about the definition of property, and there you talk about, in the decisions version, farming across more than one property was not provided for under PC1. Now, that was a concern you had at that point that subsequently been resolved to some extent by Mr. Trebilco's amendments.
No, I don't think so.
Mr. Trebilco, you've talked about this below, and he's made some amendments or recommended them to ensure that the permitted activity rules don't require the activity to be on one property, and so that the controlled and restricted discretionary rules allow farming on more than one property within a single operating unit.
Oh, yes, he has made those changes, yes.
And under the post-conferencing version, individual farms within Wairākei Estate could either operate under the permitted activity rule if they comply with the conditions, and I'm talking about the rules that apply beyond the interim permitted activity rule. These are the others for low-intensity farming. So they could either comply with those, or they could apply for their own consents under the controlled or restricted discretionary activity rules, couldn't they?
If they can comply with the definition of single operating unit.
Yes, and so for the individual dairy platforms, for example, they could approach that on the basis that those could get consent. They could get one consent for one of those individual units.
Well, I don't think, sorry, so in the definition of single operating unit, there's two elements to it, or there's three elements to it. It's what it means, what it includes, and then what it does not include. And you have to comply or meet all of the requirements of that, and it's not clear to me that the dairy units on the farm would necessarily meet that, and it's also not clear to me that some of the other operating units would meet that either.
As individual units, are you saying that?
Yeah. Well, so we haven't done a detailed analysis of exactly how you would slice the farm up, if you like, in terms of operating units, because there are so many different elements to it. I think in Mr. Trevor's evidence, he talks about a lot of the conservation areas being managed by Wairākei. The dairy units are managed by Pāmu. The individual dairy units send stock to the organic. If the dairy unit is an organic dairy unit, it sends its stock to the dairy, organic dairy support unit. If it's, there's multiple different potential permutations that need to be looked through. And they all would, as I understand it, they would all have to comply with all of the elements of that single operating unit or the definition of property. And if they don't comply with either one of those, they fall to discretion.
Understand. And if each of those was taken individually, and this is a hypothetical in terms of the intentions of WPL, but if each of those was taken individually and complied with those definitions, then they could give it their own consent under one of those particular rules. And then, looking more broadly at the estate, if WPL wanted to get one land use consent for the entire estate, it could do that, setting aside the land use change rule for a moment, it could do that as a discretionary activity rule, consent under the default rule 7. Now, I would put it to you that it's fair and appropriate, given the complexity and multifaceted nature of the estate and the activities within it, to have those two pathways available, where either the individual units could have consents relating to them under a controlled or RD status, or perhaps a permitted status for individual farms. But that if the estate as a whole wishes to get one consent to rule more, a discretionary activity status is actually a good reflection of the potential complexity of assessing that altogether. Would you agree with that or disagree with that?
No, I disagree with that, because the discretionary status comes about because of administration rather than the effects or the potential effects of the activity on the environment.
Okay. In terms of the different activities happening across the estate, if they are viewed through the lens of the different rules within this chapter, there seems a reasonable prospect that the activities would trigger more than one rule. Is that fair?
Which rules? So
example, there's low intensity farming rules, there's moderate intensity farming rules, there's high intensity farming rules.
So it triggers multiple rules for different reasons. So the arable, it triggers, I think, the discretionary rule in relation to the percentage of land that is arable farming. Some of the dairy units are permitted, likely to be permitted, sorry. Some of the dairy units are likely to be controlled.
And in the aggregate, would you expect that's a more complex situation than a single dry stock farm to which the controlled activity rule 4 requirements are well suited?
It's more complicated from an administrative point of view, but not necessarily from an administrative point of view.
Okay, thank you.
Much more?
No, sir, just two brief topics. Ms. Dines, turning to paragraph.
Sorry, I just want to, before we carry on, so in terms of that complexity, that will also be borne out in the farm environment plan, which, it's not as if the activities are going to be hidden. They will be described in detail in the farm environment plan, which will go through a certification and an audit process as well. So the complexity of management, if you like, can be addressed through that.
Thank you. Turning to paragraph 51, you've expressed some concern there about how the estate would be assessed under the NREs. Now, just briefly on this, there are two of the purposes of a decision support tool, first as a drafting gate, and secondly to help assess an activity once it's through that gate, except balances. And if the drafting gate is the NRS or overseer or stocking rate, it could be applied to each farm within the estate to confirm its overall activity classification. And then once it's through that drafting gate, would you agree that PC1 allows other decision support tools, the Rua Huawei tool for example, to be used in support of a consent application to demonstrate the matters that the applicant wants to demonstrate?
I may have lost track of the different versions, but my understanding is that the NRS doesn't really work for the estate, either in aggregate or in individual units. Overseer would be able to work. And my understanding of the latest council vision is that the ability to use the IDST for the Rua Huawei support tool is not available either as the drafting gate or after the application or to support decision making going forward. But you may correct me on that.
Well, my question, perhaps too lengthy, related to the second part of those two uses, and I just want to, for example, refer you to policy 2D1 of the plan change. We've got that there.
Yes.
And so it's on the bottom of page 15 of that version. So it says there, D1, when assessing the actual risk of the farm system.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Yes. And it talks about the ability of any decision support tool used to support determination of risk, etc., etc. So that's an example, one example, but there's nothing stopping an applicant from saying, here's my decision support tool, here's why it works. Thank you. Now, finally, in relation to paragraph 65, you've referred there to non-conforming activity status And you've said there that non-compliant activity status is proposed to be disestablished under the RM reforms. Now, you're aware that non-compliant activity status remains in place under the RMA, which remains in force in Waikato perhaps for another 10 years. Yes. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Is there any other council present who wishes to ask questions of Ms. Barnes? No?
I'll just ask one.
You don't have to. Of course, Ms. Omri, thank you.
I wanted to be very quick with my answers there.
Do you consider the word generally in policy 7 together with a 15-year consent term raises an inconsistency with 4.1 of the NPSFN, which says that every local authority must give effect to the NPSFN as soon as reasonably practicable?
No.
Thank you.
No, anyone else? Mr. Ferguson.
No question, sir.
Re-examination.
I do have an answer
for Mr. Ferguson. I'm going to treat that as a legal issue. Rushing you out the door in time. We're the ones rushing out the door.
Sure.
Thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you.
That concludes the case to where I see Pastor Sir. Just on a personal note, it's my birthday tomorrow, so I'm delighted that we're finishing
at 4:30. Well,
now we have a reason.
Many happy returns.
Thank you.
Any housekeeping matters? I think we'll be seeing some of you, but not all of you, next week in Auckland for the point source discharges before we then generally come back in the week of 6 November for presumed hearings. And you start that week, don't you, Ms. Onward?
Yes, I do.
Very good. All right. There have been some inquiries made of the registrar about observing the point source discharge matters won't be a problem because we've got full ADL facilities in the Auckland Court. If there are people who want to simply observe in the fourth week here, you'll need to make inquiries with Ms. Kim. We'll need to find out so that we can work out and make sure that can be done. Mr. Ross.
Just wondering if you want to have a brief discussion of closing.
Yes.
Maybe just in case you're wanting them in the sixth week, that's the short answer I was after.
We were thinking that there may be very good sense in us identifying a day in what is presently called week 6 to ask people to keep that clear in case we do want to have any discussion in relation to that. And we'd be happy, I think, for parties to talk amongst yourselves and work out what would be the best out that week. But I think we'd like to have that, wouldn't we, as a safety net for those discussions.
Thanks, sir. And that's week 6 is in Auckland, isn't it?
Yes, I believe so. Yes, it is. The week of the 4th of December. And again, that would mean that if any person wanted to attend by ADL, then that could be readily accommodated.
So just regarding the ADL availability for the point source hearing, I hadn't asked the manager at Fish and Game, I hadn't sent that through to Madam Registrar because I understood it was prescriptive to one council or he's given evidence, but he actually wishes to observe as well. So if I send
I have no problem with an officer or representative of a party who wishes to observe, as I say. There's no particular problem, and I understand that Ms. Kim for us has set up a Teams connection for anyone to join in. An ADL link can be done in any way, so that would be fine.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Fuchs?
Monday. My hypothetical matter has been deferred over one day, but I still can't personally get to Auckland, so Mr. Brock will be in person, but I would want to invite ABL when he needs to be questioned, if we can work with my friends if it's an appropriate time. I can be seen online for the entire day.
Right, but he will be present in the witness box. Well, that's no disrespect to you, Mr. Harrison, but it's better to have the witness present than counsel, of course.
Yes, that's a very interesting expression previously said.
All right.
But that was the only thing.
Well, thank you for letting us know. But as I say.
That's right. Very conscious, Mr. Brough made it quite clear to me that tomorrow was Hawke's Bay anniversary day, and he would prefer to be in the Hawke's Bay. So, achieved that.
There's a lot going on. Nothing else. Right, thank you all very much.
Thank you.